Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house.
Lone Rope Extraction Jack, sometime out. Andrew on the board. We have S&P Futures, I think, are up 6. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
A little groggy. It was a late night.
How does it feel to be a studio audience?
No kidding. Not a very big crowd last night. 9 o'clock game, uninspiring team, but the Fighting Irish beat Georgia Tech, and that's what matters at this point. As I think I told you in text, I don't care about style points anymore. I just want these guys to bank some wins.
They seem to be playing a little better.
I think they are. The frustrating thing is they've got these players who pass up open shots, and then they wind up going up against the shot clock. For crying out loud, if you have 4 foot space and you're in the lane, shoot the damn ball.
Well, a lot of people don't have the footwork to where they're always ready to shoot. That's what.
But if you don't turn your head and look.
Well, I'm just saying some people have their spot or are being coached that this is whatever it is. I mean, a lot of people are just, you would think that. I was watching a pro game the other night, and the amount of people they pass in like at a free open free throw spot, couldn't wait to wing it out to three. I mean, since when is an open free throw, and that's something everybody should feel comfortable taking. Just saying, you know.
Well, yeah, I get it. On the other hand, for instance, as an example, when you have a fifth year guy who transferred played 4 years at an Ivy League school, you'd think somewhere along the line someone would have taught him a little bit of footwork.
Oh, come on. Don't think anybody learns anything these days. It's it's pretty interesting.
We're venting about a 500 team, so yeah. let's not keep our audience listening to that. The listeners want to hear real stuff that's going on, like, how great I am, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, what's with every federal person now is getting offered a severance package or something?
All the people that, so they're telling everybody you got to come back to work, you got to come into the office, etc. And they're saying anybody who doesn't want to comply, first of all, they had to give them 90 days anyway, so that's part of the equation. They're just giving them a severance it's like 8 months, so it runs up to September. I guess they're saying what's in the budget, this fiscal budget. And
is he doing this as a dictator, or is this something he has the power to do because those things are all funded and he's giving people money that was not essentially funded? How does the president get to do that?
It is funded as part of the budget for them actually doing the work. Whether you call it funded for them to not do the work, I don't know. But it is a cost save, because let's assume you don't need a lot of the people that won't keep their jobs, that won't stay on. Even if you pay them severance out through the end of the fiscal year, people cost money. People being working for you, it costs money to have them work for you. So they are reducing expenses. I've been through this in the in the real world, and you have to understand that. They consume office supplies, they consume computers, they consume telephones, desks, all that kind of stuff goes into it. Plus, you know, funding. I don't know what the government does with unemployment insurance. I don't know what the government does with, different kinds of health care expenses and so on. So those are all going to come off the books. So it is a cost save, and that's part of what, I mean, part of why you pay severance to people who you're getting rid of is to give them a cushion so that they can find a new job. But the other part of it is because it's economically it's worth it to get them off the payroll.
So every single person who works, you and I kind of come at this in two different directions.
You're about to say something I never said, so keep going.
No, I know you did. What I'm saying is, one of my friends I haven't seen for a while from the Fed was in town last night, so I met him and a couple other people, and the message is to my mind is so screwed up coming out of, and it's not. I'm sure you could go back and say they never said this, but they must have, because it's what everybody heard. Everybody's convinced.
Well, come on, you know better than that, because you've been victim to what you said and what they heard.
I know that, but I'm saying the message to everyone is every single person who works in Washington is useless. Get them the hell out of there. We don't even care what they did. Whatever it is, it's nothing.
Well, it isn't exactly that, because every one of them has been offered a job as long as they want to come into work.
What I was reading this morning is every person's been offered a buyout.
Every person has been given a choice, and the choice is new rules, got to come to work every day. If that's not for you, then you can get a buyout.
So people who have been coming to work every day, it doesn't affect them at all. I've read in two spots where it's everybody, not just people coming back to work.
Not how I heard it reported, but that's...
You're probably right. I'm just saying by the time it spews out, it changes. It's... But the message I heard, matter of fact, I was talking to somebody who works for the Fed, and the question was, by the way, are you being offered the buyout? No, we work for we don't work for the government. Those people can go.
I'm like, well, yes, they do. They work for the Fed.
We don't work for the government. We work for the Fed. We're independent, so it doesn't affect them.
That's a difference without a distinction.
But those people. But I'm saying there are people. The message that is reaching. Every man, for lack of a better term, is you're probably right that it's specific. If you don't want to come back to work, you got to do this. That's not what people are hearing. It's Trump's acknowledgement that every single person in Washington is useless and could be gone tomorrow without affecting anybody. That's the message that is coming down the pipe, and I think it's deplorable. But
I think that's a message. If it's being heard that way, the people who hear it that way are idiots, because I don't think that's the message that has been presented. The message is you can come back to work if you want. Certainly there is an indication that if there's a significant percentage of them who don't, they'll be fine. So, you know, I suppose you could interpret that as every single person is useless, but I don't think it's I think everybody knows it's not going to be every person. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to say, okay, I'll come back to work. It's not going to be 100%. It's not going to be 90%.
I wouldn't wish this on you, because I think you're doing better off going to basketball games. Go out and talk to some of these older people that are right-wing, Kevin. They're hearing something totally different than you're hearing, buddy.
I talk to all kinds of people all the time.
I know you do. I'm saying, but there's this... The MAGA people are hearing stuff that we're not hearing, bud. It's
I think you have limited exposure to MAGA people.
I wish I did.
I think you have a small sample that is not representative.
So do you think that the Trump movement, for lack of a better term, has made people think more or less of federal employees?
I don't think people could think less of federal employees. I don't think they've thought very highly of them for years. So no, I don't think the Trump movement has made people think less. I think they think about the same.
What we've got this.
And there's a whole lot of people applauding and going, "Good, less of them would be a good thing."
But they don't even know what they do. I find it just horrible thought process, Kevin. I just do on a personal level. I think there's an awful lot of people who work for the. Remember, you never came to that bar with me. You were too young. You were 2 years before. One in South Bend that had the big poster that said, "Remember, everybody in the world except you is overpaid and underworked," or something along those lines. Why does everybody think?
And you think because I was underage, I didn't go?
No, I'm saying you were somehow you weren't in the. Was maybe this was the Friday night crew that went for the fish fry a few times? Maybe you wanted the fish. I don't know. But I mean, this total disrespect for anybody who works for the government. I don't know. They're regular people, for God's sake. I mean, a lot of people, I think, go to work and actually do what they're supposed to do, whatever that is. You know, I mean, you can't just denigrate everybody. I'm not saying you do, but...
Yeah, well, I get that. I think there's, you know, look, I teach a lot of working professionals. They will tell you that there is dead weight in their corporations, too.
Does anybody ever look in the mirror and say...
I think every large employer has some dead weight, and it isn't easy to identify. It isn't easy... I mean, you can identify it to some degree, but it isn't easy to shake it up. And honestly, when you do want to scale back, there are a whole lot of guidelines that you have in terms of how you go about doing it that limit your ability to cut the dead weight. You can cut the headcount, but you can't cut the dead weight necessarily, because you have to follow guidelines for how many people over the age of 40 you cut. You have to do gender balance, race balance, all those kinds of things. So even if you want to do a 10% or a 20% cut, you don't get to just identify all the, you know, your worst performers and cut them loose. You have, you know, you're required to balance that out. So it's a daunting task when you feel like you get bloated, which is why after going through that process once, I always ran my department so damn lean and made darn sure that I was telling the CEO of the company that that's exactly what I was doing all the time. So if it ever came around to time to cut loose, I'm going to say, who you want me to cut loose? I got everybody working.
So what do you do if your place gets bought by somebody overseas and they say, cut 20% at every department? Then you're just screwed.
Well, no, then I'm long gone every time there's a buyout, because senior management never stays. They already have one of me. So not my problem, Tom.
You ever had anybody look you in the eye and say our company has a little dead weight, and I'm it?
You mean look me in the eye and tell me I am the dead
No, weight? No, look in the mirror and say, man, this company's got some dead weight, and I'm it. I'm one of them.
I'm a big part of it. don't know that I have.
I don't think anybody thinks that way. It's always somebody else.
Well, there are a lot of people who are just hiding out. You know, part of good management, it has to be okay for people to put up their hand and say, I need help. Or put up their hand and say, I'm not sure I know what I'm doing here. Can you get me some help? Can you get me some assistance? I can't keep up with this workload. Can you get me some help? And a lot of people, a lot of managers just have, they don't allow that. They don't build trust like that in people. So when people don't ask, they tend to try and fake their way through, you know, every day, which is a miserable existence for them. And ultimately might catch up to them as saying, well, you're just not that good a performer. If you allow people to say, I need help, please, I'm not sure, I need some training, I need whatever, and to safely say it and say, I'm just not confident that I know what I'm doing, you could develop them, and then you wouldn't have so damn much dead weight.
What we have to talk about I want your input into this DeepSeek thing, it's pricked a few feathers, because Carl obviously has his point of view, and he knows a lot about that sort of stuff. It is I don't know enough about it as he does, but it does seem that any kind of advancement now in the computer world, for lack of a better term, is going hand in glove somewhat with government. That you're talking about the Defense Department, you're talking about the same people, and they would have done the same thing if Harris would have won. They're dropping $1 million off and kissing Trump's ass. They're in like a tick on a dog. You know, the Amazons, the NVIDIAs, those kinds of people. And they have this massive amount of investment, and really nobody appears to be going to get into that club, the AI club. It's locked into four or five places. And now somewhere out of the blue comes some other place. Now, I did hear yesterday from somebody called in and told me that if you ask DeepSeek, what about Tiananmen Square? It doesn't know anything.
It doesn't know anything about Tiananmen Square. Yeah. It'll tell you that Taiwan is rightfully part of China. It'll tell you all kinds of interesting
things. I guess even though that's the investment world did the best they could yesterday to downplay this thing, and the Navy now has banned DeepSeek from them, so the government is piling in, banning it and everything. Is this just the first crack in the door that the billions and billions of dollars in the program that these people have all had people invest into is it? My guess is if the Chinese can do it, why can't the Israelis or somebody else? And is the massive thing these other people have built, is it necessary? And are we going to go with them no matter what? I mean, this seems weird to me, Kevin. It's not just my curiosity. How I figure this out could make a lot of money for my clients. I mean, if all of a sudden it's not just a one-day occurrence where the Fed or whoever else throws money in yesterday and we come right back, and we're coming back. You know, Meta's been up $25 or $30 yesterday. If this stuff, if there really is a crack in the wall, maybe I should get some people short this stuff. I'm not yet. But, is it? Oh, don't worry about it, just some Chinese dudes, and we're sticking with our five guys, and we're putting the full faith of the federal government behind it. And don't worry, we'll keep the stocks up. Is that where we're headed, or is there a crack? I don't know.
I need some time to just sort of figure this out because, you know, and I think Carl agreed with this yesterday, and I think a lot of people do. I think Kenny voiced it as well, that how much can you trust anything that comes out of China and comes out of anything that has any connection to the CCP? So I think that's part one. So we have to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff here. But if they have made the big breakthrough, how do you do these kinds of things? Well, let me see. One of the things, let me back up the train a little bit. We've talked a lot about enabling technologies over the years. So, you know, and Carl mentioned it, you know, when he was talking about storage space. You know, we used to put things on tape because discs were so expensive, and he talked about the size of a washing machine. I can tell you about a disk drive, you know, where we used to buy banks of disk drives for the data center that cost about $10,000 per storage device. It was about the size of a two high or maybe a three high or four high office cabinet, you know, and then would hold 10 megabytes of data, and so $10,000, 10 megabytes. Heck, now you go out and spend a few bucks, you got a terabyte in a USB drive that you just plug in, you know, a little thing that fits in your pocket. So, you know, that enabled a lot. And in the meantime, you know, when back in those days, disk storage was so expensive that you put everything on tape, but tape wasn't efficient, so you would copy it to disk. For the duration of using it, it would reside on the disk, and then you would copy it back to tape and use the disk space for something else. So once storage got cheap, all kinds of new stuff could happen. Once data transfer rates got faster, new stuff could happen. Once memory got cheaper and more accessible, then all kinds of new stuff could happen. And we may be moving into that kind of an era, but one of the problems when you have all of these hardware items that get cheaper is that people tend to cover up their crappy code by just throwing hardware at it. So, in other words, my database may be laid out inefficiently, but so what? I can just buy a whole crap ton of memory. I can keep it loaded into memory whenever I want. I don't need to go be hitting offline storage every time I want to do it, and therefore I get the performance I need and never ever fix my inefficient code and never ever fix the layout or the the over-indexed database, and you're fine. So it is entirely possible that you have a company that said, I'm just going to start from scratch and do this efficiently, and I don't need nearly the resource that everybody else has. And that's very possible. I just don't know yet if that's how they got there.
Yeah, the part that seems to have, and again, I'm the Luddite on this, seems to have wrinkled or, you know, stuck something up everybody's ass is the fact that they put the code out there to where there's no bringing it back. That had to be the difference between the Wednesday speech and this Monday reaction, in my lesser opinion. But it the whole thing that it's been, and Kevin, we've been talking about it for, you know, 3-4 years on the show, because we have people here, you know, you and Carl are in on this stuff, not, you know, you're not the leading edge, but we've had this massive amounts of investments in this AI, whatever AI is defined to be, which you just define it pretty well. Massive amounts of investment. We're talking billions and billions of dollars by stocks that have incredible PEs right now. They have huge sales to price to sales ratio, well beyond anything I've ever seen in stocks that big in my lifetime in the business. And we're banking on this AI. And every once in a while, Carl or somebody on TV or somebody, other guest we have, says, you know, at some point somebody better start making some money on this stuff, because the amount of investment they're putting in it is massive. And then we have a couple of people buying nuclear reactors, for God's sake, to power it. And my brother has a group, and Dan has a different. There's a lot of different groups that trade through PTI, and a lot of, you know, we service them all, I think, pretty well. He has a group that really is involved in a lot of. First, they were involved in all the electric stuff for cars and everything like that, and now they're involved in these smaller nuclear reactors that are starting to percolate, or at least be thought about. So it's some pretty interesting stuff. I mean, we're not bringing these people to market or anything like that, but we have clients that do a lot of research, and they sort of pool their thoughts, and you know, Dan puts it together for them in terms of trade. So, I mean, the clients are the ones doing the research, and they're all involved in these smaller nuclear reactors because they think that that this kind of power, that our method, just what you're talking about, Kevin, that the hardware is going to be so big, whether the software is good or not, who knows? Well, on Monday, all those stocks, they got buried, because all of a sudden, there's something that you can use with a lesser chip that doesn't take all that power. This is going to percolate its way through all this investment all over the place. I mean, it's a big deal.
And yeah, we're in a data center boom right now, and you know I see it here because we have Microsoft and Amazon Web Services are both building data centers right now, and they're going to be hiring IT people like crazy to work in them. But you know, the question is, it was always all about the infrastructure. Can we get the infrastructure to the data center? Infrastructure being mostly power, but also power and sewer and, you know, everything that you need to run a big business. And the question now is, are we throwing money at a problem that we might not have to the same degree, and how much of that is sunk? I once had a finance professor in grad school who used to probably say once a class, fill in the blank. Sunk costs are blank. What are they, Tom?
They're sunk. You can't get them back.
They're sunk. You can't get them back. So you make no decisions based on what you've already thrown away or spent. Let's say spent. It's not necessarily thrown away. It's not a decision factor anymore. Your only decision factors are forward-looking for capital expenditures, for continuing to spend on things. So there may be a big shift in this. The question is, if some of these companies, if there really is a shift and there really is less need for all of this hardware that everybody has been buying and developing, do the large players in the system, or even the smaller players, do they have the ability to shift gears and get into the new mode and absorb whatever hit to capital that they have and build it back? And that gets to be, okay, let's look at business strategy. Things just changed. Let's assume that everything we're getting on out of the Chinese is true. Things just changed. What's your strategy now that it's changed? And that would be interesting to watch. And, you know, as someone who doesn't have a lot of money sunk in the market, for me, I can just sit back, make popcorn, and watch the show.
Well, Kevin, last night, the group are, you know, and I don't know if they own some of the stock. I think the one guy owns some NVIDIA, so maybe that's what's talking. But I'm as conspiratorial as the next. Matter of fact, maybe more so regarding, you know, China trying to find out what the hell's going on here, and the fact that they're keeping track of the students that they are paying for high tuition here. We don't seem to care about that. There's a lot of stuff about China that we talk about on the show that I'm sure as hell not happy with. But everybody's convinced. Matter of fact, I had three or four people last night that came by. We always remember we go somewhere, we get a group. Talk about everything you do is going to go back to China. Well, I know nothing about code, but if the code is out there, don't they have to be like really sneaky to have a piece of the code that sends everything back to China that you can't ferret out if you can see the whole thing?
Well, not really, because if you want to use their service that they offer, they don't show you that code. They just give you a release.
Well, what exactly mean when we say if it's open, whatever, what's the term?
Open source just says, and open source is really common, ranging from things like, Mozilla Firefox, the browser code, various versions of Linux, and so on. And generally, anybody who makes code available open source, it just says, hey, anybody, you're welcome to use it. You're welcome to download it for free. You're welcome to open it up and make code changes if you want to run it on your on your own servers and you think you can make it more efficient. And there's usually a developer community where things actually can be shared and might be even incorporated into the next release of the system. Most of these companies also will have an enterprise version of it. And the enterprise version they do sell, and that's made for bigger businesses and for them to set up. So an example of that would be like Red Hat Linux. Red Hat, IBM bought it a few years ago, and they have continued to develop it. It's open source Linux, like all Linux is, but they have an enterprise version if you want to set up a whole Linux data center.
All right, my stupid question is, if China really wants to see a picture of you or me coming out of the shower, if I have the code, can I find it, or is it still hidden?
Good question. Don't know. Haven't been in the. I'd have to see in the code, and I've been away from coding since the 1980s.
I just wonder how much, if they open it up, is it really open? Can you see it? If there's something in there that says, by the way, don't shower up without your naked picture going back to China, can you find it?
I don't think they're worried about your naked.
No, God, no.
They're worried about all kinds of other things. I hope they're not worried about my naked.
Oh, me. Oh, I know. But I'm saying, I guess it seems to. To me, last night we were having a discussion. I'm like, can you really be that secretive if you give everybody the code?
It depends on whether if for instance, if you want to use ChatGPT and open up an account and you use their system. If it were open source, I suppose you could download it onto your own server and just operate for yourself off of your own server. And that would be fine. So the question is, would I get a different version if I downloaded it compared to the version that is available for public use?
Well, I'm getting this.
And I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect that if there were something to hide, that the answer would be yes.
Okay, because I'm starting to. God, Kevin, when people say stuff now, everybody at the table hears one thing and I'm hearing another. This is getting very dangerous. I have to go see Dr. Blade, get shrunk or something. They're talking last night about. You can't, same thing you guys are saying, you can't believe the Chinese. Who knows if this thing really works or not? And I'm sitting there going, okay, that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is for $6 million and a lesser server, and I don't believe the $6 million piece, and a lesser service, they can do something that gets you pretty close. What could somebody else do with $25 million and a better server?
And close enough for most people is fine.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It might be fine.
So you have that dynamic as of it, And you're right about the investment. You know, how much support did they get directly from the Chinese government, and that there's no accounting for that in terms of the money. So, yeah, I think they have something, and it could all be stolen intellectual property too.
Well, that's what I mean. Did they help? And I'm getting so conspiratorial. Is it when I see Apple up 2 days in a row? I just wonder if they had a piece of it. If they were part of it. I just have the suspicion, and I know everybody loves Apple and it's the biggest holding in a bunch of places that I work. But their relationship with China, I think, is way too cozy. I've thought at that for years and years and whatever, but nobody cares what I think about that. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Now, Apple's real big in this too, right?
But they aren't as advanced as a lot of people.
Well, that's my point.
Part of the favorable is if everybody's going to take a hit, Apple's not going to take the same amount of hit because they aren't as far down the road in the first place.
They didn't take a hit. They were up 5% when everybody else was down 10.
Well, I know, but yeah. That's what I mean. If you consider this a setback for a lot of the large companies that are invested in AI, if Apple isn't as far down the road, then the setback isn't as big.
And if these guys are
that's a possibility. I'm just throwing that out as an idea. I don't know that to be true.
Well, these are all things that are working through the minds of all the people on the show and other people. And the point is, every single one of them is a lot of money when it comes to investing. And if I get on the right side of this and think of the right way and benefit my people, you know I'm going to go for it, right? It's funny, the NVIDIA thing the other day. I can criticize people, but I'm criticizing them. I'm going to be the one guy that says you're part of the problem. Kevin, I can't even imagine what $600 billion in value in one day. I can't imagine the number. I'm going to say, God bless, Andrew, I don't know if you can find this out. I'm going to say that the biggest country in the biggest company in the world, which I'm sure was an American, I'm not so sure, but it was an American company. I'm going to say, where are we, 2025? In 2015, the largest company in the world wasn't worth $600 billion. See, Andrew, see if you can find that, will you? When a place loses $600 billion a day, everybody goes, I'll come back tomorrow, don't worry about it. Whoa. I just have trouble with that, Kevin. That's a real number. Just saying. I mean, these places, it's hard for anybody to even imagine how big they are and how much money is involved in this. We were talking about 25.
Oh, and the question is, are they worth it now? Were they ever worth it? And how much of that is just inflated money anyway?
Well, that's another issue. I want to talk about that a little bit. The Fed meeting is today, and actually, the guy last night is from the Fed. And of course, they didn't want to talk policy, but doesn't mean I don't ask him, right? But he's not part of the policy group. I said, even with the softball morons they have doing the news conference, and we know our guy got booted because he actually asked the right question, right? Pedro, yeah.
Gotta get Pedro back on.
What?
You gotta get Pedro back on sometime.
Yeah, I know. I gotta find out.
He's a good guest.
Oh, terrific guest. I mean, but the first question today is if they don't lower rates, the first question is going to be, gee, it appears the new president wants you to lower rates. How come he didn't? That, if it isn't the first question, it's going to be the second. No matter how softball they make it, that's the question, right? Now, the money supply numbers came out yesterday. Now, again, this pisses me off to beat the band. These are December numbers, right? And we're already at the end of January. You used to get them every week. And I don't know if Trump's going to reverse that. That was a Biden decision, which I think stunk. Now, I'd love to see Trump reverse that, but I don't know if he will. It shows, I did all the calculations yesterday, just from memory. We're up again. We're on about a 5% annual increase as of last month. The month before was 6.7. Europe is on a 7% rate. Anything the guy says today regarding inflation is a flat-ass lie. He is absolutely not going anywhere near inflation. And we have, and I find it, it's all part of this, I'll say the MAGA phenomenon, Kevin, but it's not just that. It's this part of, there's, we really have two pieces of the world here in this country. We have people that are working for a living and trying to make ends meet that way, and we have people that own stuff. And we've favored the people that own stuff. And by the way, I own stuff. So do my clients. So I'm not. It's not like I. But at least I'm recognizing it. And if the Fed right now has to choose between keeping the asset bubble where it is, or helping every man, they're going to choose keeping the asset bubble where it is. And I'm so convinced of that. I don't know if anybody could talk me out of it, because right now, everybody who has stocks thinks the Fed's job is to keep their stocks higher and going higher. And that's not really their job. But the difference between if inflation pops back up again, which I think it's going to, the difference between what it does to 85% of the population versus the other 15, I don't know how much longer we can go this. Another decade? Are we going to turn out to really being the nobles and the serfs again? We're getting real close. And is there any spot where they can't push it? You know, something like this happens, and it takes out some of these four or five stacks that spent all this money on this stuff. I'm not believing the Chinese either, but it seems to me that just the fact that somebody even thought of this, Kevin, means that somebody's working on something a lot cheaper. And oh, by the way, they claim they're using our geniuses, both Biden and the other guys, decided we're going to stop the rest of the world from producing this stuff. You know, I saw a map yesterday on CNBC. The only countries in the world that can get this high-end server, or what do you call their thing? It's not a chip. A chip is on your tip of your finger. Why do they call it a chip? To think of NVIDIA, it's big as a drawer, right? That they sell. It's like a gazillion chips.
Yeah, you get processor boards that are made up of multiple chips. So it's the chip that goes into the processor that's the important invention or the important development.
Well, for those that...
But you're going to use a lot of memory chips for one processor.
Well, the one...
So you buy processors from NVIDIA. Nobody goes and buys a chip.
Well, right. So there's a processor that we, the U.S. of A. government, has banned from virtually everybody as being the AI, the cat's ass for AI, basically. What's it, the T100 or the T1000?
I forget the number, but yeah.
It's one of those. And the only countries in the world, I think, that are able to get it are like Britain, Australia, maybe some other countries in Europe.
Probably. We have like a group of five, I think, companies where we share intelligence.
No India. I don't even think all of Europe was in it. Maybe it was. But anyway, it's a real short map. So, allegedly, there's no hold on the processor under that, the 80, the T80, whatever it was. And these guys supposedly used the T80. Well, if it turns out you can use the processor that's not banned to get to the same place, are we blithering idiots or what are we?
Well, let's not rule that possibility out.
I mean, you think that shook the world? Plus, there's got to be. What do you suppose the cost difference is between the 80 and the 100? It's got to be dramatic.
You know, again, cost difference, everything. So what, you know, what kind of motivation is there? I mean, if you think about it that way, what's the motivation for achieving this? It is cost saving. It is, all kinds of, I mean, you can probably come up with all kinds of reasons. But is not necessity the mother of invention? Isn't that what causes it? So when somebody says, you know, I don't have access to the technology I need, I have to make do with the technology I have, then you're looking at a substantial, you know, then people, you know, we're left to people's creativity, and that's how a whole lot of things get invented. So, you know, that wouldn't stun me. If that's what happened, it wouldn't stun me at all.
Well, yeah, but this goes on in business. I mean, you and I know, Kevin, it goes on in business. I mean, I'm going to say when I was at Pullman, you go out for bid and you say, okay, we want to buy side posts for the car, and here's the specs in the side posts, and everybody goes, wow, they want, you know, $500 a post, which maybe what they, that's, I have no idea what they cost, but, and then somebody somebody somewhere is going to say, you know, if you give me this much money for this machine and this machine, and a couple of guys, we can, but in 2 weeks, we can be pumping these posts out for $200 a piece. We don't want to pay $5. it's the same thing, right? I mean, it's finding a way to do something cheaper than the other guy. So these guys, are whoever they are saying, all right, I either got to buy this from Meta, or I got to buy it from Google, or whoever the big guy's up on top, or I can say, boy, that looks a little expensive. And somebody says, well, I can get you 80% of the way there, a hell of a way cheaper. That's the way business works, right? Except yeah. Now we seem to have everybody...
That's how, there's people that are really good on the pure research side of it, but there are people who are just saying, what's my environment? You know, it's the old strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Well, if the threat is that I can't get the technology and other people can, then what's the opportunity? Well, the opportunity is, okay, I'm going to have to build something better with what I have. And, that's strategy. That's how strategy works.
Well, the part that, it's been kind of a half-assed theme of mine, and actually from other people on the show, Kevin, is what I don't want, and what seems like it's happening, and this is over Democrats and Republicans, this growing fascist economic system where now all of a sudden the government seems to have a massive stake in the old way, and they're going to resist anything new from somebody else. That somehow or another they're in bed with Meta and Apple and these other places, not so much Apple like you said, but they now all of a sudden they're going to act to stop anybody else from piling in cheaper, almost like a generic drug. I don't want that. But that's happening all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We're seeing a little bit of a shift away from that with the Biden administration, and I'm not saying it's going away, because it's not. So I don't mean to imply that, but there is, there was a philosophy, for instance, in the CHIPS Act, that wrote a whole bunch of rules about how you get the money, and it had to do with all the DEI stuff. It had to do, what are your hiring preferences? If you're going to build a foundry and you want public money, then you're going to have to create all kinds of daycare facilities, and I mean, you name it. It was every agenda item was put in there. Every social agenda item was put into the CHIPS Act, and if you wanted the money, you had to comply. Now, whether we should be giving them the money in the first place, whether we should be priming the pump for the industry, all of that, that's a different debate. But what I am saying is, at least with the Trump administration, and this is why you see companies like Meta, saying, I want to engage, I want to be engaged with them, is because they want those rules loosened so that they can actually focus on development of product for whatever that's worth. So that is a little bit of a change, and I've seen a lot of reporting about that, so I tend to believe it. Now, does that mean you're not going to, there's not going to be strings attached to the money? Doubtful. Does that mean there's not going to be this incestuous relationship between the private and public sector? Doubtful. It's just a matter of degree, and it's a matter of what's going to be part of it.
Well, Kevin, it comes down to, as you know, we will never argue that the progressive movement attempted to go way too far. There's no doubt about that. But every contract that I've been involved in, I was in a bunch when I was at Pullman, every one has some strings attached to it. And when I say strings, if you're going to get government money, if somebody's going to come in here, well, two things. If somebody comes in here and they're going to do a massive chip facility, be it in Kenosha or in Arizona or someplace, they're gonna want financing at 2%. Last time I checked, you and I are what, at 25 on a credit card? Well, that's an advantage. You're gonna give somebody a lot of advantage. You don't pay taxes for 5 years. Whatever deal that somehow you can cut, where the governor or the president, whoever it is gonna get his big bazoo out there. And I'm saying it's both sides. It's Pritzker or it's Trump. They're both doing the same thing. They want to get out there for this. I did this for you. Okay, well, if I'm going to give somebody that much, I remember the contracts that we signed for that, like the MBTA, or we were going to sign them with the CTA until whatever the new owners torpedoed it. But in there, okay, we'll pay $800,000 a railroad car. But hey, assholes, you're going to pay union wage. Otherwise, we want you guys bidding on the same thing. So there's going to be some rules. Whatever. You could say, by the way, the people that are working on this thing better have hospitalization, because I'm giving you 2%, everybody else is getting 8%. So there's issues with this. If you give away somebody too much, Kevin, it means you and I cannot get into business. We're essentially giving those people the business, which I don't want to do at all. You know, I'm totally against that. But the other side of the coin is you're not coming in and bidding a little lower than the next guy, and we want you to pay union wage, and you're paying half that. No, you're not bidding equally to the other guy. You know, so there's a lot to this, and you know this.
There is, and you've heard me say many times that if you want to take money from the mafia, you're going to have to do the mafia's bidding, and if you're going to take money from the government, you can expect to do the government's bidding. That's part of the deal. It's the question is, what does that mean? What is that bidding? And I think that's what I was discussing.
But the stoops that are
and so yeah, that's the biggest problem, because if you think you're going to just get government money and run free, you're not, and that's not how it works.
But if somebody had a whole bunch of, I'll say, over the top garbage in there about, well, I don't know about daycare centers or that much over the top, but whatever, you and I would both look at it and say this is over the top. Now, when these guys come whining to Trump that they just gave a bunch of money to, which I'm sure they gave money to Biden too, they're going to come whining to him, and they say, oh man, it's so unfair. We don't want to have a daycare center. We don't want to hire, minorities. We don't have to train these people. That's when you and I are going to say, okay, you don't have to do that. But by the way, this 2% rate I'm giving you, it's now 5.
Well, a daycare center is just probably a bad example.
Yeah, it's probably a bad example.
Because I think they're actually a good idea for a lot of companies. But, and that they might do it on their own.
Yeah.
But now if you're going to tell me the number of gays, the number of lesbians I have to hire.
Yeah, man, that's over the top.
That kind of stuff, that's off the deep end.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Much like we saw with we've seen with California, the Los Angeles Fire Department, did they hire to lead it? Did they hire the most qualified person for the job, or did they hire the most qualified lesbian for the job?
Well, without a doubt.
It might be the same, and it might not be.
But I'm saying some of these guys might be getting such an amazing deal where you're blocking anybody else from ever even competing with them. You better be ready for a whole list of stuff, even if it doesn't sound right.
Well, yeah, and so I would rather have a competitive market personally. I would rather have competition for that. Whether that means more than one person gets the deal, or whether that means nobody gets the deal, that's a policy debate, and I think
When's the last time you heard?
It's one that should always be part of the discussion.
When's the last time you heard, even on Stacks and Jacks, we'd be the only people that put up there, that all of a sudden you see somebody getting some massive piece of property and they're going to do all this good stuff and all this kind of crap, and they get all these advantages. Somebody coming on afterward and going, well, you know what? I went and got a whole bunch of equity, and we want to put a place up like that. And we asked for half as much, but we didn't give these guys a bunch of money, and we didn't get anything. When are you going to get that guy on TV? Because I'm sure that guy is around there somewhere.
Yeah, he is. And you know what? That may be the scrappy guy who comes up with the innovations that you need.
Well, you know what? But even that, Kevin, having saying that, If Pritzker, and who knows, I think he's having a problem with the mayor, but if he can somehow get somebody to occupy where Southworks used to be, I tell you what, I don't know that could have been done privately. So you got to be careful when you say bad stuff about everything. If he pulls that off, I'm sitting there going, how the hell did he do that? Talk somebody into moving into that place. But if he did, and all of a sudden now there's a bunch of jobs down there, and CVS is a school again, and University of Chicago is pumping graduates into this place. Boy, I don't think there's anything. But that's one that nobody's. People have had 40 years to want that property, Kevin. They've had enough time to do it privately.
Your problem is what doesn't work out. That's the other one. So in St. Joe County here, Amazon's building a data center. That's going to happen. It's AWS. They'll use that capacity, no problem. But they're building it in the same vicinity as a General Motors and Samsung electronic vehicle battery plant. Guess what project has slowed down?
Oh, the battery thing has to have.
Yeah, because the demand for electronic vehicles has been so disappointing. So now you've created all tax abatement for it. You pulled a lot of infrastructure. Thankfully, Amazon's going to use a lot of that infrastructure, and it's going to work. That part of it's going to work out. But you know, you're at risk of having a white elephant out there, and even if you don't, you're at risk of having something that's going to be operating at a lower capacity than the original model suggested it would.
Why are we so slow to tax electronic cars for road usage? Because rich people own them and they got to vote, or what?
Well, you know what? I believe that will happen, and I believe the way it will happen is that they're going to tax everybody for road usage. At least I think if the Biden administration had had its way, they would tax everybody for road usage, including gasoline-powered vehicles, as still a way to advantage electronic vehicles. So you got to pay for the roads, but by the same token, if you're paying gas tax and road tax, you're still disadvantaged by driving an electronic vehicle. I don't know how this is going to shape up going forward, but I do believe they will have to do that.
Right, but how this has been around?
Properly fund roads.
This has been around now for this. Who this favors, and that's why, you know, when I talk to people with money and all they do is bitch about other people who get stuff from the government, when actually people that have money probably get more from the government than poor people, but they don't want to admit to that. The first day, this it kind of goes with my argument that's getting old now because they have to pay taxes pretty much. How the hell do you have somebody with a brick and mortar building selling TVs, and somebody can order one from Amazon and they don't pay taxes, they get it 10% cheaper? How can you let that happen when the guy's paying property taxes and everything else in the city? Yet it must be that the people who favored that, you know, I'm not going to, you know, Pritzker's wife buy 5 TVs and he didn't want her name coming up on the list of people who didn't pay her. Somehow or another, people with the means and the money to buy these expensive things out of state benefited big time, and we're really, really slow to go after those kinds of people. The first day, I mean, this is how long has, you know, the electric car has been here? I'll say 10 years. When's the first Tesla? Is it 10 years, 8 years, somewhere in there?
Yeah, commercially popular to whatever degree it is, probably more like 5.
Okay, so let's say 5 years. Are the people we have in government we're trying to lay off, Are they that stupid, or does somebody is there a bottleneck somewhere that says, no, these are richer people paying a lot for these cars, we don't want to tax them? I mean, people should know that when you go buy your gas, okay, you're going to pay, was it 12 cents to the Fed and something else to the, that goes into the Highway Trust Fund. When you see some guys working on a bridge, that's what pays for it. And the genius or the idea is, if you got a big old truck like I have, when I had the Suburban, it's heavier than mostly everybody else's stuff, I'm going to do a little more damage to the road than anybody else. And oh, by the way, I'm buying more gas, so I'm paying more. There's some method to the madness. Okay, now put a Tesla out there. Well, it's heavier than my friggin' Suburban. It's going to do more damage to the road, and the guy pays nothing. Now, why is that? Is it because he's a preferred bleep? Or because we think he's rich and he's voting for me? Or what are we doing here? Why?
Well, I think because, you know, policy, and, you know, there have been mandates that go with this about how many EVs we're going to have people building by 2030. So you wouldn't want to put anything on there that would discourage it. In fact, you know, how many times did someone like Pete Buttigieg go on TV and they'd ask him about electronic vehicles, and he would talk about how much cheaper they are to operate, as if you know, power were free. So, you know, you would see all this kind of stuff with him. They did not want to refute that narrative. Now, sooner or later, they're going to have to, because they have to pay for the roads. So, you know, that would be it. But right now, the agenda item was to actually get them on the road and do nothing to discourage that.
Well, if half cars go electric and your highway trust fund is now half as big as it was, who pays for the bridge that just fell on my head? Nobody?
No, you do.
I do, because it landed on my head.
Plus your head hurts.
Plus my head hurts, yeah. I mean, but these are...
So, yeah, I think left to their own devices, I think the last administration probably would have raised the federal gasoline tax way before they would have imposed a a usage tax on EVs.
But it's so ignorant I can't even go there. Unless you figure that the power you use to pour into the thing, that if all of a sudden your electric bill is going to go from $50 to $200, okay, well then some of that tax that goes to the city should go to the Highway Trust Fund, right? Maybe you should have to mark. I mean, am I right or wrong? I mean, something has to happen.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that, you know.
What are you doing?
That's kind of your bureaucrat mind, isn't it?
Bones, Dr. McCoy, say on Star Trek, the bureaucratic mind has been a constant throughout the ages.
Yeah.
So, what about no sports this weekend, really, huh? We got the Crummy Hawks, the Crummy Bulls.
There'll be some college basketball.
Who won that big game yesterday? Tennessee played somebody big. I fell asleep at the end of it.
I don't know. I'll tell you in a sec.
Tennessee, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, two of my least favorite schools.
But don't you hate it when you watch a game and you want them both to lose?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I'm going to fully admit this to you guys, and don't get mad because my wife has changed. But I used to be like that about your alma mater.
I can see that.
A lot of people in the South. I've switched from, you know, being a Southerner to a Northerner over the course of a quarter of a century, and so now I'm all on board with it. Plus, I have a lot of people I like, including the two of you, that are graduates of Notre Dame.
So is
Russell.
And honestly, that's the only graduate of Notre Dame that I knew before you guys was Chuck Lanza, who played football there for a couple of years.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yep.
Yeah, Chuckles was from my high school.
Okay. Well, here's the thing, Russell, that is a little strange. So for years and years and years, if you weren't a Notre Dame fan, you generally hated them with the
they're polarizing.
Heat of a thousand suns. And that was typical, and people really didn't like Brian Kelly, and they didn't like Charlie Weiss, and that, you know, you can sort of go back through the years about a lot of reasons. This season, as people watched them and got a load of Marcus Freeman, who is incredibly likable, you know, there were a lot of people who were like you, who said, "Well, I kind of like them." And that was very unnerving for a longtime Notre Dame fan to actually be liked.
So now my attitude is just kind of, I mean, hell, you can't live in Chicago and be a hater on Notre Dame.
Well, then, not on the south side for sure.
Northwestern loves to say we're, you know, Chicago's Big Ten school. Chicago's, you know, major college football team is Notre Dame. It just is.
That's true. And you know, Illinois could be, but Illinois isn't. So they have that problem. I do think you have in Chicago, you have a very strong Big Ten core. It's not unified because mm-hmm. you have a lot of Iowa alums, a lot of Wisconsin alums, Illinois, of course. In fact, I used to, this is always a fun story to tell. I used to go to the Big Ten tournament a lot when they played in the United Center, the basketball tournament.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that they always had was a little booth on the concourse where fans could go down, either as individuals or as a small group, and record them, you know, do a recording of them singing their school's fight song. And then during one of the breaks during the game, they would do a mashup going around to all the Big Ten schools' fight songs. And so, you know, when they'd go to the Iowa song, and all the Iowa fans in the place would jump up and cheer. And then they'd do the Ohio State song, and all the Ohio State fans would jump up and cheer. And they'd do Illinois, and Illinois would get the loudest cheer because that had the biggest alumni group in the in Chicago. So you get a lot of those. And then, you know, as they go around each one, they finally get to Michigan, and everybody would boo.
Oh, of course.
Well, you know, some of that, what's happened on that, Kevin and Russell, is one man's dumb opinion, is since the University of Illinois has made it harder and harder for people from Illinois to go there and basically kick you to the surrounding states, there's a huge, I mean, Matty Weber's our dear producer, he thinks he might want to come back on Monday mornings and do a sport report, which would be really cool because I love to have Matty back. But his wife, Jill, she's from the Western Burbs, attractive, smart, nicest lady. She went to Iowa. Now, she met a gang out there that are very devoted to Iowa. There's probably as many Iowa bars in town, maybe more than there are Illini bars. Same thing for Wisconsin.
My sister-in-law and my brother both went there.
And I'll tell you what, if we were a lot younger and we were looking for a mate, go to one of those places. Every one of those girls, one's nicer than the next. They're all attractive. They all went to like vet school or something. They're all bright as all can be. Just pick one out. I never saw a nicer group of people. And the Wisconsin people are the same way. I think there's more of those kind of bars in Chicago. There's a bunch of Notre Dame bars than in Illinois. I admit there might be a couple in Iron Bar, but not that many. Because we kick everybody out of state and have been forever. I think that's what my opinion is.
Well, and the other side of it is you just have an awful lot of kids that are moving here from all those different universities upon graduation.
That's
even
true.
If they're not from here. There's part of the reason they do that is what you just talked about.
Well, in Indiana,
they all have a home bar. I don't know what the Indiana home bar is.
Well, 15 years ago, I mean, when we knew a bunch of guys that came from what was the name of the school, Kevin? Was it Cathedral? Down in, where did Jan and Mack and those guys go?
Indianapolis Cathedral.
Indianapolis Cathedral. So we knew a lot of guys, but everybody else, I mean, the people from Southern Indiana, they were just all Jakes. I mean, they were like they were from Mississippi. There was no. But now, all of a sudden, University of Indiana in the last 10 years, and you're, you know, perfect example of that, it's a real place. People that here are they're going for athletics. I'd say more of the people at Marist High School, women's volleyball and other kinds of stuff, went to Indiana than any other school. It, all of a sudden, it has massive traction. Maybe it's because you went down there. I don't know, but...
I think it's just, got a good business school, got a good... You know, got some other schools that are really attractive, and that helps. But they the whole Kelly brand thing, they do an excellent job with the different alumni clubs around the country, et cetera. The Kelly alums, the biggest alumni club is in New York City.
Really? Well, that's not surprising, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, just because the business school, et cetera. But yeah, we have a huge alumni club there. They've got the organization here. I think I'm going to go to something in a few weeks. The guy that produced some of the Batman movies is an Indiana graduate. He's doing a presentation for the alumni group in Chicago.
Well, the biggest alumni group.
Even though I'm not an alum, but I don't know. I'm an associated person.
Well, the. Interesting about alumni clubs is the biggest club for Notre Dame, and this is how, you know, politics is everything, and especially when it comes to religious schools. Every other alumni club in the country, now I used to be on the board, but I haven't been for a long time, but every other club in the country has all your fundraisers and, you know, places for meet and greet and that kind of thing, and the university just expects you to pile the money to the university, whatever's left over, right? Well, the Chicago Club of Notre Dame is so big, they wanted no part of that. So it was a love-hate relationship. You had the school had to love the place, right, Kevin, because there were so many people here. And when they had a Arachne dinner, there'd be, 1,000 people there. I don't think there is anymore. In those days, there was. But the Chicago Club said, no, what we're going to do is we're going to interview kids here from Chicago that if they don't have enough money to make it to Notre Dame after you come up with whatever your scholarship was, we're going to give out extra scholarships so those kids can go there. And it got so ugly, and I think the club is kind of wound down a little bit. It got so ugly that the university, being the asses they can be, would give somebody their scholarship stuff, and if the club goosed them another $1,000, they were taking $1,000 back. So it became almost like an all-out war. But there were some people when I was first started. There was a guy named Brian Shannon, and Brian, his brother Dan was All-American at Notre Dame, I think, and he was the head of the racing commission. Brian was one of the nicest guys, and he was connected. I'm going to say Brian not only saved, he made Misericordia. And Brian, and with charitable operations, I mean, when Brian said he was on your side, he was on your side. And the University of Notre Dame never went against him. Holtz came here on a on an incredibly snowy night. He landed over here. Brian got the city to send him to Conrad Hilton in a helicopter. I mean, you know, Brian, that's how tight.
They have priorities like that.
But I mean,
hey, guys, I got to go. All right. So I'm going to
take care, Kevin. But Brian and now, you know, Brian's been dead for a while, and I think the club is not as powerful. But I don't know how Misericordia is doing. But anyway, there's individual people all along the way. But what Indiana has done, I don't hear anybody talk about Ohio State or Michigan State or anything anymore. Anybody's going anywhere is going to Wisconsin, Iowa, or Indiana, aren't they?
I mean, you know, I feel like, well, my lovely younger daughter who just walked out, she's right in the middle of the whole college thing, and I've heard among her friends that want to do business, those are the ones I hear a lot about, just because, you know, like, Kelly's an attractive name to kids from Bennett, and you know, I'm a professor there, so people ask her about the school, et cetera, even though I have nothing to do with getting in. But we hear an awful lot about Indiana. We hear a lot about Wisconsin's business school as well. And in fact, I think one of the kids that my daughter used to spend some time with, I think he got into Kelly and he got into Wisconsin. I think he's actually leaning toward Wisconsin. So
why doesn't you?
And I can tell you, it's within my space. My final choice was between the business school at Wisconsin and the business school at Indiana.
Why doesn't the University of Illinois, which they have all this property over here, why don't they have a serious business school at their Chicago campus?
You mean UIC?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to speak out of school, and there are probably listeners that know better than I do about this. But I do know that the Champaign campus, and this is from when I was associated with UIC. UIC would contract with SIBO for us to teach a derivatives class, and we actually used the classroom at SIBO.
Okay.
So they would have MBA students that would come over to SIBO, you know, for 6 weeks in a row for a half credit class in options. And then they had somebody that from the futures industry teach the other half of the derivatives class, and they would teach that. I don't know where they physically taught that, but I just learned about the relationship between UIC and Illinois. I think in Champaign, I think it's gotten a little better, but you know, like over on Wacker, I know that's not the direct. You know, over on Wacker, there's the Illinois Alumni Center. And part of the reason that they have that in the Champaign campus has to do events there is because they really don't have access to the UIC campus, which I think that's to the detriment of the University of Illinois system. We in Indiana, we work beautifully together. You know, there's every year in November, I talk about how I do the little roadshow thing that the Kelly School does, where we talk about a market outlook and we talk about the Indiana economy and we talk about the U.S. economy. And basically what we're doing is we're going to every town in Indiana that has an Indiana University campus.
Why does it seem to me with...
And then it goes beyond that, in that we work very closely with the curriculum with Ivy Tech. So you can go to Ivy Tech for a couple of years. You could come to Indianapolis, the old Ooey Pooey, and a big portion of your of the classes you took will transfer. And we've got high school. And it's not that I'm bragging on Indiana. I'm going to make a point about Illinois. But I had one of the best students I ever had. I should have her on with us. You would love talking to this girl. Mariana Villa Senior. She's worked in accounting for a firm in Indianapolis now. She graduated at 20 because she was able to take classes at Ivy Tech and when she was in high school, because she got ahead in high school and was able to graduate in 3 years. And it was very much of a seamless process. Illinois is not organized like that in higher ed at all.
Why? I mean,
I mean, I don't. Visionary leadership.
Well, but Kevin talks about it all the time, and so do you.
I know, I do. And Kevin's at the Ivy Tech end, which helped. If Russell Rhodes, I'm 57 now. If I could backtrack 40 years and redo college, I would totally have gone to a junior college for the first couple of years, because I had to make the money to pay for the school. So I could only go. So that's how I ended up at Memphis State. It was the only place I could afford. But nobody told me that I could have gone to Shelby State, which was one of the junior colleges, for practically nothing and done the first couple of years and then transferred to Memphis, or maybe transferred to a better school.
I'm a little older than you, but you wouldn't have done that if you were my age, because the colleges were cheap.
Memphis was not expensive. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I was paying $1,200 a semester.
Okay.
I had to put away 200. What I had in the back of my mind was I had to put away 200 bucks a month when I was working to pay for the next school year.
Okay, because mine was, I think my senior year was $3,000 for tuition and $1,200 for room and board.
Yeah, and you went to I lived at home, but
$1,200 for room and board. Now room and board's like $15 or $16.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I'm sending one to George Washington, and I'm sending another to. I think she's going to go to Indiana.
Well, good for her. Illinois has places, but I don't. For some reason, the coordination that Kevin's always talking about. I actually had a listener. Write me who's going, younger lady, who's going to, is it North Central? There's a Purdue campus around Valparaiso or someplace?
Oh, yeah. Purdue Northwest.
Yeah, because Purdue is involved in this.
The professor I drive down with another professor who lives out here in the Western Burbs. I'd have her on with us because she's got some specialty areas as well. But she's got to do little kid drop off and stuff like that.
Is Purdue sort of like state school? They're kind of like a Michigan, right?
Right. Well, Purdue, and I don't know how they work with Ivy Tech, but Purdue does the same thing with satellite campuses that IU does.
Well, I mean, I don't.
They work with them. They don't. And I think I really think that the reason that UIC and Illinois don't seamlessly together like the Indiana system does is, you know, UIC was started it was basically started by the city of Chicago and by the Daleys for, you know, because they felt like we needed a major state university in the city. And I think Illinois looked at that as competition initially.
Well, they also wanted to clean out a bad neighborhood.
And they did. Well, do you know where the original UIC campus was?
Navy Pier.
But
my cousin went there. It used to be called Illinois Teachers College, didn't it? It was on Navy Pier.
And they put it on Navy Pier. It was actually.
But it wasn't called
military. It was for military folks.
But it wasn't for. It was not called Illinois at Chicago at that point, and then they moved it over to this place. But the coordination, like if you're going to. Say Richard J. Daley in the South Side, which is a junior college, and they have some stuff. But if Moraine Valley is a lot like Ivy Tech, where you can go there and you can get, I don't know if they're trying to get 4 years or not, but you can go there and you can do accounting, you can do finance, but you can also, you know, do auto mechanic stuff. If you go to my auto mechanic down south, all his certificates are from Moraine Valley. Brakes, you know, ignition systems, he's got like eight of them on the wall. I don't think if you're at Richard J. Daley and say, gee, you know, I want to help my dad out in his mechanics place, that Daley will let you go to Moraine Valley and get, you know, a couple of certificates for while you're in another. I mean, the coordination that you guys are talking about is just lacking here totally. I think
it's fantastic, and a lot of what we like promoted. I'm not officially promoted until it's approved in a bill by the state legislature, and I think that the way that we work with the state legislature in Illinois, Indiana, forces us to work with other organizations.
So you're like Mike Murphy's son, who just became a.
Way.
You're like Mike's son, who just became a full bird colonel, and he has to be voted by Congress. you have to be voted by the state. I like that.
Yeah, when I when I'm up for it right now, when I move up a little bit in my position, it's not official until they approve it in the state legislature over the summer, along with the budget and a bunch of other stuff.
I hope they give you
you've been mostly in the Chicago area your whole life. I've lived in Georgia, I've lived in Tennessee, I've lived in Illinois for good periods of my life, and I see how things, you know, how differently things are run from state to state.
Well, if you were going to be a guy who...
Yeah, I lived in Indiana. I basically can say I live in Indiana. I'm down there a lot. I'll be down there a lot more for the
Well, if you want to be a WAG, you mm-hmm. can say you've lived in both parts of the country, north of I-80 and south. Just saying.
That's the over-under for northern and southern Illinois.
Yeah. Remember Frank Fahey used to say, I was north of I-80 or something?
How is Frank? I haven't heard from him in years.
I keep trying to get him back on. He's kind of retired from some stuff, doing some stuff, and I don't know. Frank's a really good guy, and I would like to have him back on.
That's just a name I haven't. He'd ping me every once in a while for stuff because he lives out here in the western burbs too. But,
yeah. He moved to Indiana.
Oh, good for him.
He's right. He's right where the new spur of the. The South Shore. Where is it? It's down by Crown Point or something. He's right a block away from like the train station or something now.
Okay.
Anyway, hey, we'll lead into this before break, and we'll talk about it after. What do you make of this last week? I mean, I was talking to Kevin. I don't know if you were listening in about. I mean, this is figuring this out to some extent. It could be a huge boon for my clients and me. Is somebody going to undercut these guys with these billions of dollars, or is government going to make sure that nobody can undercut them, or they're all in on the five firms that claim their AI, even nobody seems to make any money on it yet? And is somebody going to, whether it's the Chinese or somebody, to me, I don't, my summary of my knowledge of this is, I don't believe necessarily the Chinese, anything they say, but the fact that somebody seems to have said they're 75% of the way there with like less chips, don't need a nuclear reactor, and oh, by the way, here's the source code. I think that's a huge warning shot for these guys that are billions and billions of dollars and just haven't made a dime. I mean,
I think they're lying.
Totally.
I think they're lying. I'm just going to, you know, you hear people dance around, you know, China says that their growth was 5% last year, but, you know, the government numbers are suspect. When you say the government numbers are suspect, it'd be kind of, you know, sometimes we talk a lot about CPI and how it it's nudged maybe to you know, make the government look good or whatever. I don't want to go back down that path right now, but you know, I think we infer that they're doing small things like that. No, they're freaking lying to us about a lot of stuff.
I agree.
And this is kind of like. This is an Elizabeth Holmes moment for AI, where what they're saying that they can do is impossible. Remember, Elizabeth Holmes was the Thanos person.
Yeah, yeah.
And put a drop of blood in, and it tells you everything about you. Well, you can't do what they're saying they're doing. It just can't be done, and they. I think they're outright just they're lying about how well this thing works.
Well, I mean,
what everybody got excited about was they had they suddenly had shot up on the App Store downloads. So a bunch of people are downloading it now. I will guarantee you, if I did a map of the world and it highlighted where all those downloads are coming from. It's probably three or four click farms in China.
Okay, but here's...
And a click farm is where you hire somebody just to over and over again do something on the internet, so it makes it look like there's a lot of attention.
Well, I mean, here's...
And I went to sign up for this thing, and it won't let you sign up, and it suddenly has a banner at the top that says, due to a malicious attacks... We're curbing the number of people that can sign up for it right now. No, you're doing that because it doesn't freaking work.
Okay, well, here's where I am. I'm kind of with all you guys on this stuff, and I don't necessarily think that this thing is going to do what they said it's going to do, right? So I'm with you. So, but here's where I kind of digress a little bit. I've been uncomfortable all along with this massive money going into this AI by a few firms where nobody can really get in, and they seem to be really up the ass of government on the whole mess. Where they're buying, you know, nuclear reactors to power it, like this is somewhat the only way. And you know, and Carl and Kevin are very truthful on the show. Kevin said it wouldn't be the first time that if you're rushing the code and you think you need all this hardware and all this power to make up for the crummy code, that somebody somewhere doesn't say, gee, if we just fix the code, we don't need all that power and we need something else. He says it wouldn't surprise him at all, or Carl the same way, that somebody doesn't take a chunk out of this starting today and saying, you know, these guys have been at this for years and they're billions into it. Like I said, with their nose up the ass of government. And now, what if somebody says, we don't need all that server power if we go this direction? It wouldn't be the first time that happened, Russell, whether it came from somebody here or from Britain or from Israel or China. It wouldn't surprise me at all if somebody came in with a much cheaper sort of AI that gets you 75% of the way, which most people need. And all of a sudden, these billions of dollars are gone. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
70% of AI, or you know, maybe about 50. You know what about 50% of AI is? Google search.
Probably.
I mean, that's you know, you can get or Wikipedia.
But I mean, it wouldn't shock me.
If you've got a question about, if you've got a question about something, and you Google that name or that topic, you know, typically one of the first things that'll come up will be the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Wikipedia page is pretty much a compilation of a lot of individuals throwing information in there and editing it, et cetera, and group source updating it. I would have a bit more confidence in that, where you have a lot of eyeballs on it and you have people that have the ability to correct it, than, you know, a machine that pulls in information from all over the world. And then,
why do you
based on your prompt?
We're gonna go to break here, but kind of stew on this question a little bit, because you probably, out of all the people on the show, can answer this better. How is it that if a Luddite like me, you know, I'm sitting in front of a computer watching stocks all day, so I'll get something in my wacky brain, and I'll look up, college tuitions. There's a site, I think it's run by, I don't know, the university, something, going back 30 years, how much every university, I mean, there's so many universities. God, every, yeah. Illinois probably got 40 universities. You would never know that.
Oh, God, they're 40 in the Chicago area.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you go every single one, it'll tell you every year what their tuition is, what their out-of-state tuition is, if there's a difference, what their room and board is. All this information is right in front of you. It's unbelievable. Okay, I tried to get in there a year ago. Now, guess what? You got to pay to get in. Okay, so I mean, if you want to go to the Washington Post, you can't just go into the archives. Same the way with how exactly is AI? Not exactly, but think about it. How do they go get all this information from all these places and bust into all this stuff that nobody else can get into? Are they hacking it?
See, I because I'm an academic, and I'm one of the great things about the Big Ten is we share library resources with all those schools. And the Big Ten is as much an academic conference as it is a sport conference.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
So if you've got, you know, if I can log into certain databases and pull, you know, every time Warren Buffett talked about selling a stock, which I was able to pull in, you know, in one batch of articles, you know, if I can do that through certain databases that I have access to, you've got to assume that the AIs have access to those databases as well.
Why? They're not a university.
Yeah, but they can pay for access to them. That might be, you know what, right there, that might be the cost difference between the China one and the U.S. one. Maybe the U.S. guys are actually, you know, part of the cost associated with it is paying for access to the LexisNexis database. And then having their AI read every article in there and supposedly learn from it.
Well, but we've seen this, I'm going to say relatively recently. I think you know what I'm talking about here, because I know a little bit of what I'm talking about here. When the cloud came out, remember before before on TV, if you didn't say AI every other word, you had to say cloud every other word. And years ago, it was China, if you weren't in China. Yeah. Well, the cloud, the idea of the cloud, you know, where's Kevin when we need him, is basically to offload your backup and your stuff into servers that you don't have to go buy new servers, right? Well,
yeah.
At one point, I think it was Microsoft, decided they were going to have these big, massive cloud places, like 5-6 places in the country. And one of them was going to be in the northwest suburbs, I think Schaumburg, somewhere up there. And I don't know if they started work on it, and at one point they estimated that this facility was going to use, like, what, 30% of the power of the entire township up there or something? Some incredible number. And all of a sudden, as stuff got cheaper and cheaper, they canceled, I think, all the other ones around the country. And I'm not so sure they ever finished the one in Schaumburg after billions of dollars went into the place. So, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time in our lifetime that we're talking about buying, you know, nuclear reactors to power this stuff that somebody says, wait a minute, I got a better way. You don't need a nuclear reactor. Yeah. What do you do? I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, would it?
No, it wouldn't be. But there's only so much you can do with a certain amount of computing power. And basically they're saying that, you know, they're a 95-pound junior high school boy, and they're bench pressing 400.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be me, you know.
Yeah, so they're lying.
On that note, SP Futures down.
I'm just telling you, they're lying, man.
I think they probably are, but is it?
And I don't know why we dance around and don't say what it is. It's a freaking lie.
Well, I think the reason why, Russell, and grade me over our break, I think the reason why is we've had, how many times on the show have we had Kevin, you, Carl, and Hal saying, you know, Apple and NVIDIA, not NVIDIA so much, but Meta and Google have poured billions and billions into this AI, and they haven't earned dime one yet. I mean, at some point, you better do something. And if somebody
and
were to...
And they aren't going to.
Well,
there's no money in AI.
Well, but then if somebody says, by the way, not only is there not any money there, Joe here came up with something that's a hell of a lot cheaper, and everybody can use that instead. I mean, that would be a... Boy, talk about a fart in church for these guys.
Yeah. It would be fantastic, but I'm just telling you that they can't do what they say they're doing with the technology that we have, and they're sure not doing it with the technology.
Well, tell you what, though, I'm with you 95%. Yeah. But if they did, God, what a shot in the eye for our other guys.
It would be, but they don't. It's not working. Commercial. I have to talk to my wife.
I hear somebody said that they. What was Tiananmen Square? I won't tell you that.
Remind me when you come back from the break. I got a funny story about
that. SP Futures down 14, NASDAQ Futures down 2. We were up a bunch. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Low and overhead stocks and jacks. I'm talking about Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 16. We were up, I'm going to say 85.90 in the NASDAQ when we came in. It's been just leaking down here. I know it's leaking a little faster, but, you know, not horrible. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 140.6%. FTSE up 27.3%. CAC around down 31.4%. So a little mixed, but mostly to the upside, I would say. Over in Asia, we have the Japan has been on a tear. Nikkei up 397, 39,414. keep trying to make it to this 40,000. It comes back. Maybe we'll make it this time, this week. Who knows? That's a full 1%. Hang Seng up 27.1. Shanghai down 2. Actually, they've been closed now for a couple of days. I think it's the Chinese New Year. I think it's Andrew, is it the year of the snake? I think it is.
It's the year of the wood snake.
So, the what? The snake?
The wood snake.
Well, we can't hear Russell. We'll find out when he comes back in. Bonds. We got the 10-year down 3 basis points, 4.52. Remember, we got a Fed announcement today. Nobody's talking that much about it because they expect no move, yet the news conference should be interesting given Trump's pounding the table for lower interest rates. So if they don't do it, the first question is going to be, why didn't you do it? Bund down 2 basis points, 2.54. Japan unchanged, 1.19. Oil down 25 cents, 73.52 is now... Oil has moved up into the low mid-70s, and now it's languishing like it did a while at 68. Brent down 31 cents, 77.18. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.42. So it's come back down from 4 since the weather has gotten a lot warmer in the Midwest and Northeast. RBOB unchanged, 204. Gold down 230, 27.92, but it's making a run towards 2,800. Silver up 19 cents, 31.08. Copper up a penny, 4.26. Foreign exchange, and this has been moving around a little bit, the euro is under 104, 103.90. Wow, that's pretty strong on the dollar side. British pound, 124. I'm going to say this is as strong as the dollar has been really in quite a while. We've got Bitcoin up 286, 102.028. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? Not much sports.
Yeah, not much going on there. It is Wednesday, January 29th. It is the year of the snake, is what Russell was saying earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, currently with sports, the Blackhawks won over the Lightning, 4-1. At least we got a win, but not much. For Chicago weather, we're looking a little bit better. We're currently at 36 degrees. It's mostly sunny and breezy today. Going to have a high 44, and going to have some rain tomorrow, even though the temperatures are going to stay around that area. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 45 degrees. They're going to have a high 59. They're going to have some partly sunny and cooler skies with a couple of showers here and there. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, inbound traffic is heavy from nearly every direction, actually, especially if you're coming in from the north side. We do have two accidents to report. First one is on the I-57 heading north at 111th Street, while the other one is... is on the Kennedy heading east before Illinois 64. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Did you ever, Russell, did you ever trade by the stars and by the that kind of stuff?
No. I wasn't that goofy.
There was a guy here who used to trade by the stars, and there was a lady who, she always used to wear, remember the old Parthenon restaurant?
Uh-huh.
She would show up there two nights a week. She was the, what do you want to call it, the star... trader lady.
The astrologer,
and she was on Bloomberg forever.
Oh, was she really?
Yeah, and she we're eating over there one night. She comes by, of course, Audrey's all into this, right? Well, she wants to read my palm, and I'm like, nah. Well, then she goes, wait a minute, that's a very interesting power. You have two lifelines, not one. That's so unusual. And I'm going, I don't know what that means, but I grabbed my palm back before she go any further. But she was. It's not just your year. It's your year is supposedly matched up with your astrology sign.
Okay.
So I'm the year of the dragon. In a Sagittarius. She goes, oh, that's like the highest there is. And I'm going, so what does that get me necessarily? But it's the year, and it's the dragon is a serious year because it's the only non-real animal that's in the list, and and evidently something together between the Sagittarius and the dragon, which I couldn't tell you, makes for a really good one. So it's not just the year; it's the year and the sign. Is what I heard from her, but she was on Bloomberg for a long time.
They would have. Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't know where to go with that one, and you don't leave me speechless very often.
I'm just saying. There was a guy. Remember, maybe before your time, a guy named Norman Winsky. He used to trade. He actually wrote a book on it, on trading by the stars.
I'm sure. If you can find you can find correlations all over the place, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a reason. You know what I mean? If the Santa Claus rally still happened, and every year, and whatever the sign is toward the end of the year, you could say that, you know, you should be buying stocks. These people should buy stocks during their astrological sign. Well, you know, especially those that were born around December. Well, yeah, because the market. But so, I part of me has always felt like with stuff like that, you're finding correlations that don't really have a causation to them.
Well, what's the level of math? And I was pretty good at math, but I was only in one spot. You know, I was the spot where, you know, trigonometry, and I was okay at calculus for a while, but everything I did had an answer to it. I was not big on the stuff that sort of didn't. But what's the level of math that they used to, at University of Chicago, they were all over this stuff. When I first got there, they were the only place, now you guys have it in Indiana, everybody's got it, where they were the first people to have the Institute for Study and Security Prices, where they had every mm-hmm. tick on the exchanges back to whenever the New York Stock Exchange started in 18-something-something. They were the first person to have that. Now, whether they gave it to other people or everybody did it on their own, I don't know. But now everybody's got it. In fact, Notre Dame's got a big library of it, too, and I'm sure you guys do.
Wharton Data out of Penn, that's the one that is kind of like the one that everybody has.
Okay. Well,
but I know exactly what you're talking about. The one that Chicago has is extensive, and probably as far as closing prices is as extensive of a database as you can get.
Well, but they went back and ran all the technical stuff. You know, the head and shoulders, the double pennant, and the interesting, they came out and said, yes, there are those patterns, and you can definitely identify them mathematically, but at no point are they predictive, which I never could really understand that. In other words, you could say, yes, there was a double top, but when it was happening, the computer never could pilot you saying, hey, idiot, it's a double top sell. I mean, it was never predictive until like a month later when you saw that it happened.
And I was that double top?
Yeah.
That second move up would have been the.
So what does that mean? The patterns are there, but they're not predictive. Almost like a business cycle. I mean, yeah, we have business cycles, but it's hard to tell when you're in one or not, or when it's going to start, right?
That sort of stuff is very, very, very difficult. Basically, what you'd have to do is you got to program a computer to say, okay, this looks like if it turns around, it looks like a double top. So let's sell here, and if the double top fails, let's buy back, you know, because we went higher, which is how the double top would fail.
Well, if you're going to trade this the last few days, and now we know a little bit about it, and obviously your view is this shiny.
I have a strong opinion about it.
Yes, but now
I benefited. I was short the stock market. I was thrilled, but I thought it was a really terrible reason for the market to sell off.
Okay, so what I'm saying now, but now for me to make a bunch of scratch over my clients, is the Nvidia going right back to all highs? Everything's safe. They're P's to the moon. Or is there some arrow that got through? I mean, maybe somebody somewhere else was going to come up with something that challenges this. You know, the three or four firms that are running the show. Is it something I should be worried about at this PE? And if I have somebody in Nvidia, make sure I have puts. I mean, something has changed over the last 3 days. I'm kind of with you in the sense that this particular one is probably BS, but I don't know that it means there aren't others around.
What the issue is here, and this is, you know, you and I have kicked back and forth on this program a bunch of times, just about, you know, how can it, you know, you can tell when stocks are expensive, and stocks are expensive. If you take a look at where we were at the end of 2024 and what the earnings estimates are for the S&P 500 in 2025, the forward PE ratio was at a very, very high level. And it was at a high enough level that on average, the 10-year returns are flat. Once we reach this high of a level, at some point in the near future, we've had some sort of a correction. And then making up for that correction is where the flatness comes from. What you need is you need a catalyst for the correction. And sometimes the catalysts in hindsight are just silly. So when you're extremely overvalued, like we were going into the weekend, and you have even just a piece of news that sounds like it, in a remote way, may be a game changer, during a quiet news period, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot else going on in the markets on Monday, so everybody used the same excuse for what happened to the stock prices. But you've got kind of like the Los Angeles area. You've got a lot of dry brush around, and you just needed a spark to make things terrible. And you know, a BS story out of supposedly an AI firm, which, you know, this AI actually grew out of a hedge fund trying to figure out how to invest using language processing.
Really?
Where this version of AI came from? It came from a hedge fund.
Okay.
You know,
so. I'm looking here at in 1996. I don't know how I'm just going 1997. This thing is cruising forward here. I found a website, and I don't know if I'm using AI here. 2008, the highest valued company was Walmart at $206 billion. Microsoft is 217. Oh, okay, now I'm going to go to.
Yeah.
So we're talking. Where do we have to go to find out? Apple in 2011. Is $407 billion. All right, let's try 2013. ExxonMobil's, Alphabet, Google's catching up. What, this thing is one hell of a. All these, there's all these bar charts here. God, if you were drunk, this would be bad because all the bars are all moving.
Are they flipping around on you?
No, they're moving back and forth. So anyway, I guess what I said earlier, even at 2016, Alphabet, Google was $550 billion. Well, Nvidia lost $600 billion on Monday.
Yeah.
We're at numbers. Maybe we're using the university. At a university computer, you maybe can understand these numbers, but I sure as hell can't. Let's see, 2019, Apple was pushing $1 trillion. That was what, 5 years ago.
And everybody got fired up about the first $1 trillion company.
Yeah, and but it's with this, and third was in 2020, Apple is $1.1 trillion, Amazon $970 billion, Alphabet, Google $798. Then you drop way down to Facebook $475. And actually Berkshire Hathaway. So these guys lost essentially more the other day than the top three stocks, and every stock in the world except the top three in 2020. That's unreal. And what do you make of, I don't know if you saw the money supply numbers, they slipped out at us yesterday. We're still percolating along at a 5% annual rate, down a little from last month. And this guy's going to come out today and say he's fighting inflation. Why should I listen to him?
I don't know if he's going to say he's fighting inflation or not. The inflation thing's going to have to work its way through, and we haven't really worked through higher salaries quite yet. So regardless of what you try to do, I think we're going to have another smaller bout of inflation. I always thought that was going to be the spark that caused a sell-off during the first half of this year. That was really what I thought it would be. But you can't ever guess that catalyst. But you can take a look at the market and know when we're in a situation where there's a lot more downside risk than upside opportunity. And
I
really feel like we're still there. So, but if I had money to put to work and I wanted to buy stocks right now, I'd buy a semiconductor fund. I wouldn't go straight into NVIDIA, but because that sector got hit fairly hard, I would take a look at a fund that gives you exposure to that sector.
Well, one of the interesting parts, and again, I'm still with you on the Chinese are lying part, but there's so many levels to this, Russell. I don't know how I got on the part. Somebody must have sent me something. They the lying Chinese, they claim the top end. I mentioned this to Kevin. The top-end server that NVIDIA pops out with, chip server, whatever you want to call it, the thing's big. It's not a chip that you put on your fingernail.
No, it's basically a machine.
Yeah, so the top-end server has been banned by the Biden administration, and I don't think Trump's going to change it. He might make it worse or better, depending on how you... we can only export that. They had the map on CNBC yesterday for a second. It looked like we can export it to Australia, Britain. There might have been a couple more European countries in there. The map was squirrely to that side. India wasn't on that list. Other people that we think maybe our allies weren't on the list. Okay, so that thing is, we have now banned this server from going to any of these people. It's their high-end one. Mm-hmm. Well, part of the message from the Chinese, and again, we both think they're lying, is that they were able to do this with the not high-end server, the one under it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, what's the difference in cost in those two? And it means, could we be as big idiots in the world by thinking you can't get there without this server? And it turns out somebody does.
Well, if they can't, but again, I don't think they can do what they say that they've done. I just don't. And if they can, that's absolutely fantastic. But this thing's been around for a while, and they suddenly make an announcement that comes shortly after another big state-owned entity is banned in the United States. I think part of the timing relative to the TikTok ban is something that I don't think that's a coincidence right there. I really don't think that's a coincidence.
I don't think it is either. Whenever you get this consortium of 4 and 5 big companies in the government saying this is going to be the way we're going, mm-hmm. seemingly always somebody finds a better way.
I've had an issue with AI since day one as far as it being the next big thing. A lot of the entities that make money off of the whole cryptocurrency thing are the people that sell the specialized hardware to mine that stuff.
Yep.
And my thinking with AI is there will be some people that, much like the internet, Amazon figured out a way to utilize the internet for commerce and make money. When the internet first came out, it was, this is kind of neat. How's anybody ever really going to make money off of it? Are you really willing to buy a piece of clothing that you've never tried on? Backtrack 20 years. A lot of what we do on a day-to-day basis seems very unusual to us now.
Well, you also have a situation
would have seemed very unusual back then.
Well, when you just mentioned something simple like that, isn't the amount of returns and clothing and stuff like that like 15-20%? It's huge because stuff doesn't fit.
It's huge, but still, just the fact that we would that we're willing to go through that process, and Amazon's aware of that. I think you can return Amazon clothes to Kohl's.
I think that there's
more
of a
that you can actually do it.
Remember,
but just beyond that specific example, just the whole macro thing, the way I interact with the world today versus the way I interacted with the world, I'll say 25 years ago before text, internet, and everything else, it's amazingly different.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazingly different.
Well, your knowledge, the way to look up stuff is so much easier. But then again, nobody reads the newspaper. So you read a couple papers a day, you picked up some of the stuff. You didn't have to look it up.
Exactly. No, things have changed dramatically. I don't see how AI makes things change dramatically. It's a neat tool. I asked, you can go on to Twitter's AI and you can say, roast me, and it'll take a look at a bunch of your tweets and like make fun of you in a few different ways. Apparently, I spend all my time talking about the markets the only people that want to have anything to do with me are finance geeks. That was it insulting me. It's pulling your old tweets. I do want to make a point about the DeepSeek thing. There are rumors, and I don't know how this would work, but there are rumors that DeepSeek used all the TikTok data that China was gathering.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me.
That's where
they're getting a lot of their knowledge from. How about you become a full-time investor in TikTok? It's the only place you get your information from.
Well, judge me here, Professor. The other day when NVIDIA is down basically flat on its ass, and it's taken a lot of the other ones with it, Micron and all those things, and all of a sudden I see this huge rally in Apple. How screwed up is my mind to say Apple must have helped these guys or something?
No,
I said it popped in, and I said, you know, don't be an idiot. That's probably not happening. But it was sort of weird. I don't know if you noticed on Monday.
Well, Intel was basic. I think Intel was up.
Well, you know, Monday.
Because that's not their space. You know, it was this was very much of a calculated move to mess with NVIDIA because we have banned NVIDIA from sending chips over to China. And the Chinese look at U.S. companies like they're an arm of the U.S. government. And you would say maybe they are to a certain bit. But I mean, I remember teaching a Chinese student that asked me what percentage of the Chicago Board Options Exchange is owned by the city of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Because every entity over there, the government owns a part of it.
Well, in Europe, it used to be the big banks owned a part of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, what on Monday, I don't know if you have a screen, I mean, you're teaching, you've got like a real job. Well, so do I, but my job is to watch the market for people so they don't have to. So I'm sitting here with this huge screen in front of me, and I see NVIDIA basically getting its ass kicked and a bunch of the other ones. Everything you would think of in that area is getting clobbered. You know, the NASDAQ futures are down like 850 points, and yet your medical stocks are to the moon. Your retail firms, Home Depot and those kinds of places, are way up. Your transportation average has got a shot up its behind to the moon, and everybody's like picking winners. Like, now if it's cheaper, these guys get to buy it. What was the mentality there that I was missing? I mean, if AI is cheaper, those guys get to buy it cheaper. So it's was there any logic to it at all, or was it just selling one place and buying somewhere else?
Just selling one place, buying another place, I think.
Because I mean, it was a massive move in every one of the healthcare stocks to the upside.
Yeah, defensive stocks. You know, that's one of the things that'll happen when it looks like there's a problem with growth stocks. You might see money flow into defensive stocks, and healthcare is definitely defensive.
But money, but
I don't know. You know, and that's the one sector nobody's brought up with respect to how Trump's going to impact it.
He's not going to do anything. He didn't do anything last time.
And I think that's why. That's just an area he's not focused in on.
This is an observation. This isn't I'm on one side or the other here, because I could categorically say I'm in the middle. The last, since Hillary tried to put the healthcare system together and basically roundly booed out, and hers, we've had a situation where the Democrats, through Obamacare and other stuff, have tried to do something. Whether they did a good job or not, you know what side of that I'm on. Could Obamacare have been a hell of a lot better? Yes. Mm-hmm. They tried to do something, and the Republicans, through Bush's administration and Trump's first term, did nothing about bitch at the Democrats' solution and never came up with one of their own. And I think
that's true. That's absolutely true. They never said, here's an alternative.
So in the midst
and that's what you want out of, you know, basically a two-party government.
I mean, somewhere in this mess,
if you don't like it, don't just say you don't like it. I don't like it, and here's what I'm going to do about it.
I mean, we can fire all the federal employees in Washington we want. That's a pimple on the ass of an elephant in terms of money compared to what we're pouring into the medical system. And if we don't fix that, that's the hole in the budget. It's not the people in Washington. Are we better off if we get rid of people?
They're a small, small cause. They really are. The redistribution stuff is the stuff that you really need to get into if you're going to try to change things.
Well, you got to figure out the cost of, you know, we got to worry about patents. We got to worry about, you know, do you get 17 years at any price you feel like? I mean, boy, that's a long time. You know,
and when you got no competitor, that can be that can be an issue.
So where are you? You're here, obviously.
I'm here in the western suburbs.
When
going back and forth on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
All right. Well, as usual, love to have you, bud. Say hello to everybody.
I will tell everybody you said hi. Puppies are doing awesome.
I was going to say, how are the puppies? Because, by the way, the young lady downstairs, Jess, and she's the one who did the CPR on Kendall, one of my friends had a heart attack downstairs in a bar, believe it or not, and saved him. She's a terrific young lady. She bartends one night a week just to get some extra cash, but she's a vet tech. And she said she finally broke. She's been doing this for like forever. And guess what she did?
She brought home a French bulldog.
No, she brought home a German Shepherd puppy that got hit by a car and had to have one of its back legs amputated, and has a little bit of a hip problem with the other one, but she thinks they can fix it. They brought him home. He's walking on three legs like nothing ever happened. And she goes, the first time it happened, and she loves the little guy already. I mean, I got a small world story about the other young lady down there who's a vet tech, Katie. Wild Irish girl, but she's funny as hell. I mean, and really dedicated. She's the one with 6 dogs, 4 cats, a 75-pound tortoise, and a 40-pound tortoise. You should see the 75-pound tortoise, how quick the guy can move. So he hangs in the garage. He loves kale, but he'll eat spinach or lettuce. But he loves kale. So he just hangs. He gets a little bigger all the time. The heat went out in the garage. They had to put the guy in the basement, and he was not happy down there. But anyway, Audrey's poodle had ingested some cotton. I don't know if somebody threw it over the fence or what. The poor dog was so... They managed to get the cotton out of her. They didn't have to open her up. But there's a vet out in Oak Brook where you get to stay with your dog for a while. So Audrey spends the night there with the poodle, and the poodle's fine, which is great. Poodle's a great dog. Audrey's got this room where there's like a real comfy bed for the dog, and there's a bed for you. So I showed this to Katie on Monday night, and she goes, I used to sleep in that bed all the time. I used to work there. We have a 12-hour shift. Whenever I was tired, I'd go and tell Audrey she was in my bed.
That's fantastic.
Talk about us. But anyway, the poodle's fine. Audrey's is a place out there. They do an amazing job. But I really hope this little shepherd has a pretty good life because Jess has fallen for the little guy.
I think he will.
Yeah, I mean, and you've saved me by saying your dogs are okay. 4 or 5 nasty emails from the ladies who listen for you every Wednesday.
They're doing great.
Are you doing any more hospicing or no?
No, not right now. We're not.
Here's something off the request line from Liberty Island. We gotta squeeze some New Year's juice from you, Big Apple.
What is that? So you haven't seen the blind guy in a while?
Excuse me. I have no idea where this is coming from. Give me just a second here.
Anyway, we're over time anyway. Be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks. We'll get the report on the blind Frenchie next week from Russell. Andrew, nice job. So somebody hacked in? Is that AI hacked in to the podcast?
I can see exactly what's going on here. It is the other program for streaming our show that I don't use.
Okay.
That's playing at the same time.
Anyway, Russell, thank you. Andrew, nice job. SP Futures down 11. NASDAQ Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures bounced 50 points here. They're up. NASDAQ is down again. Fed number today. Talk about it tomorrow.
That's all, folks.